How strange,
Dennis says, shaking his head.
Could it be Niall's sister made a mistake? I suppose we'll never know.
Ruprecht can build another pod, though, right? I mean, it was mostly just tinfoil.
The problem is that he has no blueprint. From the original design, he keeps making changes, but these he does not write down, so it is impossible to replicate exactly.
Later that day, Ruprecht approaches Skippy. His expression is feverish.
I've devised a foolproof plan to get my pod back from St. Bridget's. I call it Operation Falcon.
Skippy looks dubious.
This is your chance to get in on the ground floor.
No way, Ruprecht. Not after how that last one went.
That was Operation Condor. This is Operation Falcon. It's a totally different operation.
Sorry. Ruprecht trudges off to canvass the others. Bad as he feels for his roommate, Skippy can't deny that he personally is having a great day. He woke that morning with a memory of the night before waiting for him, like a gold coin hidden under his pillow. And whenever he thinks about it, which is every few seconds, he is overtaken by a big, daffy smile.
You kissed her again, didn't you?
Dennis is finding Skippy's uncharacteristic happiness disconcerting, and even somewhat offensive.
Whoa, Skip!
Jeff is awestruck.
That means she's your girlfriend. Holy shit! You have a girlfriend!
And then at lunch break, he leaves maths class and walks directly into Carl. For some reason, after the fight yesterday, all thought of him disappeared from Skippy's mind. He hadn't considered what would happen when their paths inevitably crossed again. From the way the boys around him instantly come to a halt, though, from the way the air of the hall quickens, he realizes they've been waiting for this moment all morning. There is nothing more he can do now than brace himself for the blow, the sucker punch, the sly kick to the ankles, the swift knee groinwards. But Carl seems not even to see him. Instead, he drifts on by like an old, grizzled shark hulking through particoloured schools of minnows, oblivious to the catcalls and hee-haws aimed at his receding bulk. In today's history class, Howard the Coward, who looks like he hasn't slept much lately, or washed, or shaved, wants to talk about betrayal.
That's what the war was really about. The betrayal of the poor by the rich, the weak by the strong, above all, the young by the old. If any question why we died, tell them because our fathers lied. That's how Rudyard Kipling put it. Young men were told all kinds of stories in order to get them to go and fight. Not just by their fathers, of course. By their teachers, the government, the press. Everybody lied about the reasons for war and the true nature of the war. Serve your country. Serve the king. Serve Ireland. Do it in the name of honour, in the name of courage, for little Belgium. On the other side of the water, young German men were being told the same thing. When they got to the front, they were betrayed again by incompetent generals who sent wave after wave of them into machine gun fire. By the newspapers, who instead of telling the true story of the war, churned out this brave Tommy's death or glory stuff, making it seem like a great big adventure, encouraging even more young men to enlist. After the war, the betrayal continued. The jobs the soldiers had been promised would be kept for them had mysteriously disappeared. They could be heroes and wear medals, but no one wanted war-damaged goods. Graves' friend Siegfried Sassoon called the war a dirty trick played on me and my generation.
Did he seem a little off-balance to you?
Mario asks afterwards.
One of these days he's going to come in with the uniforms for us, and we're all going to march off to the Somme,
Dennis says, and taking out his ledger, moves Howard 5 places up the nervous breakdown leaderboard, so that he's just behind Brother Jonas and Miss Timony.
Betrayal,
Ruprecht muses to himself, while letting his gaze linger over Dennis.
What's that?
Oh, nothing, I just like saying the word. Betrayal. Betrayal.
What's your problem, asshat?
Betrayal. Has kind of a ring to it, doesn't it? Betrayal.
Get Get bent, blowjob. Don't try and blame me for losing your gay pod.
Guys, come on.
Jeff pleads.
The audition's in 2 hours.
It is. And by 4 o'clock, what looks like a kind of musical zoo has gathered outside the door of the sports hall. Folk and rock groups, choirs and quartets. Dancers both tap and break. Here, warbling up and down his scales, is Tiernan Marsh, the fourth year, wheeled out at all official events to share his angelic tenor. Although he's better known among the student population for his propensity to eat his own scabs. Here, Roland O'Neill, bass wizard of Funkulous, quivers slightly in his tight pink leggings under the baleful stare of John Mandler, hirsute lead singer of Mandler. Definitely the most impressive act the school has in terms of sideburns. Here, Titch Fitzpatrick, running over his MC routine for the 100th time, affects not to notice the unmistakable smirk on the face of his rival for the slot, Gary Toulon. Nor to hear Gary Toulon's not-quite-soto-enough remarks, such as,
"What's he going to do? Change nappies on stage?"
Just ahead of the Van Doren Quartet in the line is Trevor Hickey, a.k.a. The Duke, who, with no visible means of making music, is staring into space, mumbling a speech to himself.
"Since the dawn of time, our oldest and most indefatigable foe."
Jeff keeps catching snatches of this, and curiosity eventually reels him in.
Trevor, where's your instrument?
Shock and amaze. Oh, I'm not giving a musical performance.
Not musical,
Jeff repeats, and then the penny drops.
Here, you're not going to do Diablos, are you?
Mm-hmm.
Jeff gazes at him with a mixture of awe and concern.
It's just,
he says after a moment,
you know, the automator's in there.
Mm-hmm.
Trevor's ceaseless shifting from foot to foot is only partly to do with nerves. He has eaten 5 cans of beans on either side of going to bed, in order to build up a plentiful supply of trapped wind, or as he calls it, the power.
I'm just wondering, you know, whether the Christmas concert might not be more of a family-type show.
Your family don't fart.
Trevor turns on him.
Well, they mostly wouldn't set them on fire.
That's the beauty of what I do, you see.
Trevor interjects, eyes aglimmer, already lost in his own myth.
Turning tedious bodily functions into a magical encounter with the elements. It's what the whole world dreams of.
Beside him, Brian Jeekers Prendergast listens to this, green with anxiety. Thanks to this ridiculous business with the pods and the mounds, the quartet is severely under-rehearsed. As if that weren't enough, it seems the old friction between Ruprecht and Dennis has broken out again, worse than ever. Ruprecht has told Jeekers not to worry, that the piece is so easy it can't possibly go wrong. But he isn't the one who'll have to face Jeekers' parents if they don't get into the concert. Next! The door swings open, and Gaspard Delacroix, creator and sole performer of The Little Sparrow, Gaspard Delacroix sings the songs of Edith Piaf, flounces out, tugging off his fright wig and muttering about Philistines. Patrick the Knowledge Noonan and Owen MC Sexecutioner Flynn exchange a single nervous glance. Then, with a deep breath, they put on their showbiz faces and troop inside. The gym is totally empty, save for a single classroom-type desk set right in the middle of the floor, behind which sit the automator and Father Lawton, the concert's musical director. Trudy, the acting principal's wife, stands to one side with her clipboard. The boys mount the stage, gold chains clinking, and spend the next few moments slouching back and forth, mumbling mysteriously to themselves. Then, to an enormous, naked drumbeat that explodes from Sexecutioner's ghetto blaster to rock the entire hall, they begin to bounce around the boards, making inscrutable hand signals, their vast trousers flapping about them like sails, and Knowledge grabs the mic.
I got X-ray eyes, but she's wearing lead pants, so I got to get her booty wet.
Next! The judgment issues summarily from the review panel, before Sexecutioner even has a chance to drop his first motherfucker. For a moment, the boys remain rooted to the spot in un-gangster-like attitudes of woundedness, mocked by the drumbeat that is still thumping around them. Then, unplugging the ghetto blaster, they clamber down and make the walk of shame to the exit.
What in God's name was that?
The automator says as soon as they have left. Trudy peers down at her clipboard.
Original material.
Our old friend, original material.
The automator says grimly.
I've had some plumbing mishaps that sounded a little like those guys.
It did have a certain rough-hewn vitality.
Father Lawton moderates.
I've said it before, Padre, this concert's not about rough-hewn. It's not about doing your best. I want professionalism. I want pizzazz. I want this concert to put the Seabrook name out there. Tell the world what we're all about.
Education?
Quality, dammit. A brand right at the top of the upper end of the market. God knows, that's not going to be easy. I've given serious thought to bussing in other kids, talented kids, just so we don't have to drop the curtain after half an hour.
I'm not sure that would be quite in the, spirit.
Mutters Father Lawton.
Just a thought, Padre, just a thought. Speaking of which, though, had a couple of other ideas I wanted to run by you. First one, thought we might stick Brother Jonas in there somewhere, you know, representing Africa, various peoples the Paracletes have helped over there, bright future they can have if everyone rows in, sort of thing.
Father Lawton's bowed head turning from cherry pink to a florid magenta.
Maybe wear traditional dress? Say a few words of gratitude in his tribe's language. I want to remind people of this school's long and continuing history of charitable work.
Is the money from the concert going to Africa?
Well, we haven't decided exactly how it's going to be allocated. That 1865 wing isn't going to rebuild itself. But anyway, that's one idea. The other one's this. Father, what comes to mind when you hear this word?
The automator pauses dramatically, then with a shimmer of fingers pronounces
DVD.
Father Lawton blinks.
DVD?
Memorial concert's all about remembering, right? What better way to remember than with a special edition commemorative DVD? Let me break it down for you. You put on an event like this, you're going to get parents coming along with their cameras wanting to film it. Psychology of the 21st century crowd. People like to capture the spectacle, own it. Call it a side effect of late capitalism, call it an attempt to stave off the ineffable transience of life. Point is, at these precious moments, they all want to get little Junior down on tape. So, what I'm thinking here is, we beat them to the punch. We filmed the entire thing, and so instead of a shaky handheld recording complete with Aunt Nellie coughing and rustling sweets beside him, Junior's dad can have a professionally edited, digitally enhanced DVD. His to own forever. Yes, yes, carry on.
This last is addressed to Trevor Hickey, who has been hovering on the stage with a glazed expression these past few minutes. And now hurriedly begins his speech.
Ladies and gentlemen, the feat of daredevilry you are about to see will shock and amaze you. Fire. Man's oldest and most indefatigable foe.
I've made a few inquiries. A couple of old boys working in the business, they're telling me we can get the discs printed for about 50 cents a pop. Packaging probably works something out there too. Main outlay is going to be the recording, lighting, camera hire, sound desk, labor. But whatever we spend, we'll make back 10 times over. Think about it. DVD like that, it's the perfect Christmas gift. Every uncle and grandmother and third cousin twice removed will be getting a copy of it.
The ancient Greek philosopher Heraclitus believed that the universe was made of fire.
And they'll be glad to, because not only will they be getting white-knuckle rock and roll by classically trained musicians, French horn playing of the very highest caliber, a patriotic ballad in our national language, Irish, and more, all on the same unique historic bill, but with the proceeds, they'll also be investing in Seabrook's future. Actually, that's pretty good. Make a note of that, Trudy. A piece of history, an investment in the future. Jesus God, what the hell is that kid doing? What the hell are you doing, God damn it?